The Music Business Worldwide podcast is supported by Volley Music, a leading financial management platform for the music industry. Volley enables you to track expenses, approve invoices, and make payments 24/7, 365 days a year. For your free trial, head to volleymusic.com. That's VOLYmusic.com.
Hello and welcome to Music Business Worldwide Talking Trends podcast, which is once again supported by Volley Entertainment. My name is Tim Ingham. I'm the founder of MBW, and Talking Trends sees us look behind pretty regularly now two headlines that have happened in the last week and or further afield, but are relevant to the current week, and we give our quick take on them. I am once again delighted to be joined by Los Angeles-based Charlie Datry, a music industry veteran, a thinker, a conversationalist, and the founder of businesses, including Datry Songs, CC Music Royalties, and Best Quality M&M. I say that Charlie is a music biz veteran. Those of you who've heard this a few times will know, but he's worked at labels including Def Jam and Columbia Records, and for a long time worked at the company now known as Disney Music Group. Charlie, welcome back to Talking Trends. Please pick a topic that's been on your mind from recent music biz or entertainment biz headlines that you would like to discuss this week and explain why it's been pinging around your gray matter.
Well, Tim, I've got a subject that I think is pretty recent, yet it's been overlooked, and that is the Fortnite video game. Wow, that sounds radical, but no, there is an entire component that was dropped going into Christmas holiday last, just 2023, called Fortnite Festival, and which is combined with a very significant music store that has proven to be both vital and extensive and being refreshed. And there's an aspect to it that I think that we all managed to sleep on for a long time, which is that some time ago, Epic Games, the giant video game publisher behind Fortnite, had bought Harmonix, the famed lab that created Rock Band. And the reality is that was a very vital part of both exposure and commerce in the music business about a decade ago. And so it turns out they've never gone away. They've been working away, as the boffins do in their lab, programming things and coming up with algorithms. And this game is an entire subgame to the Fortnite, and I'm going to use an old word that was tired but may come back, metaverse, which is that there are bolt-on parts to what Fortnite is doing that makes it a universe that people can go spend hours in. There's a Lego component that's not relevant to our conversation today, but it includes a significant music store whereby the functional equivalent of $4 or $5 are paid for an individual song that people get 30 or 40 seconds of that they can use in the game and components of the game in various ways. I was impressed by the Christmas holiday where UMG, Universal Music Group, the 800-pound gorilla of the international music business, had a very spectacular presence, whether it was Lady Gaga, the current album, by the way, Eminem. Obviously, it's a hit-based business, so it tends toward catalog, but it's not only catalog. New singles from artists are promoted and presented, and it seems very vital. Sony Music, if you remember, is an investor, and I think it's going to become one of those areas, or when I say it's going to, it probably is becoming as we speak, a significant contributor to the bottom line of every music company that has hit music. It's got their Harmonix is on record. They have worked out how to add additional playing elements, peripherals, they call them, which are guitars or keyboards or other pieces, which encourages the interactivity of the audience with music. They have already ported music across the various components of the Fortnite universe. In other words, you can use it in the original battle game called Battle Royale. Of course, you use it extensively in the Fortnite festival area. And there's a very wide variety of music that they're paying attention to, and they're refreshing as you would if you had a record store back in the day, of new material, classic material. Obviously, they have all the modern data, so they have a micro amount of information about what's selling and who's buying what. And then they're bringing in bolted on parts that sometimes use the original music, sometimes don't. And I think that it's got a lot of potential. I think it's causing real action in the marketplace right now. Similarly, Roblox, with a younger audience, has worked to that degree to some amount, although Roblox obviously skews in a younger demo. But Fortnite has a very broad base.
A few things have both popped into my head, and I just looked one of them up while you were talking. For those who don't know or don't remember, Rock Band was huge, as Charlie points out, with the plastic guitar peripherals. Its big rival at the time was Guitar Hero, if you remember. So there was actually a whole genre that was globally popular until the kind of bottom fell out of it slightly. And we at Music Business Worldwide have been puzzling for a while, it's fair to say, over what Epic Games was going to do with Harmonix, as Charlie points out, the maker of Rock Band, for some time. The fact that they've been beavering away on this thing is news to me, but it's funny. The mention of the metaverse, which obviously people get very sniffy about these days, with the exception of Mark Zuckerberg, maybe, who changed the name of his company. But if I think back to the number of presentations and beta product launches I saw when the metaverse was the big buzzword of, but towards the tail end of the pandemic, it's actually only probably a year ago, Charlie, these things move so quickly, a year to a year and a half ago, tail end of the pandemic, obviously 2022. But what I mean is metaverse was still bouncing around at the top of 2023, I would say. My favorite quote about the metaverse actually came from someone whose origins were in video game development, a gentleman called Gabe Newell, who created a game called Half-Life, people may or may not know, created another game called Portal, people may or may not know, and then went on to create the Steam store at Valve, which was effectively the iTunes store, certainly for the independent side of the video games industry. He's an extremely successful individual, one of those video games entrepreneurs that, had he done this in more mainstream tech, or mainstream is not the word, but tech that is recognized by all demographics, he would be mentioned in the same breath as Steve Jobs. And he said that the metaverse was, quote unquote, a solved problem. And I think he put a date on it. I think he said about 2006, he said it was a solved problem. But the reason that spoke to me so much was because we don't need new metaverses. These incredibly sophisticated metaverses existed in video games already, and to Gabe Newell's point, have for the best part of two decades been as good, if not better, than anything that I would say that Mark Zuckerberg or anyone else was wanting to come up with when all of a sudden the metaverse became the buzzword in the last few years. So the thing that I looked up online was that Fortnite has 600, and in 2023, this is, I believe, it had over 600 million registered players. Now, registered players are not active users, and we should point that out. A lot of people would have been a registered player of Fortnite since it launched and have aged out the game, have matured beyond it, have moved on to other things. But it does just go to show the scale of the reach that Fortnite has and continues to have. It's also, very importantly, in video game parlance, is a cross-platform game. So you, Charlie, could pick up your PC or another device and I could play you via my Xbox today, which is still a rarity in that sort of blockbuster end of video games. In terms of the pedigree of the team behind the music-affiliated areas of Fortnite, Harmonix, who you were mentioning before, that's high-level premium. In terms of Fortnite's reach, that is global and at huge scale. And in terms, I guess what I'd like to ask you about really is to get your thoughts on, does the music industry sometimes overlook the desire of consumers to interact with music in this way? Do we sometimes forget? And I guess the streaming era, speaking most broadly, might be one of the times when the music industry, myself included, has been most guilty of this. Do we forget that consumers see value in and are willing to pay for music in these different ways that actually have their roots in decades previously and aren't to do with future-looking metaverses? They're actually the consumer behaviors that have been here for a long time.
Generally, I would say it's both yes and no. I think there are entire parts of music organizations, particularly the major distributors, the Universal Music Groups, the Sony Musics, the Warner Music Groups, that have staff and are constantly paying attention to this. And it's one of the advantages they have in the marketplace, because it's hard to do if you're small and it's my famed Tim and Charlie Records and we're just struggling to get everything done. But I think that certainly from a media point of view and the popular discussion point of view, absolutely it's ignored. The truth is, we always overemphasize whatever the one hot thing is. And it's always, there are these additional components of the business. I like to cite, the truth is, you and I have talked before, and the truth is, if you pick any particular point in time, there was another significant contributor to the music business as we know it. If you go back to the 50s, it was jukeboxes. The major trade charts were not just based on radio or ultimately radio and sales as they were, but there were jukeboxes. And a decade ago, ringtones. Remember when ringtones were everyone's conversation and then the market subsided? But the public consumes music in a number of different ways. It is always multifactorial, and the great music organizations know that and address it affirmatively by having staff and resources that they dedicate to it. The Christmas promotion that I referred to in Fortnite, when they dropped the game and they dropped the music store, was heavily dominated by Universal Music Group, who have a ton of hits and I'm sure benefited really well. Now, Sony's got great exposure in there as well now. There are Warner Music titles in there now, and I think it's ultimately a music store that will take all comers. But yes, we certainly do ignore really significant parts of what are the music business every day.
Colour me convinced. So I will be keeping an eye out for Fortnite Festival in particular to see how that grows, particularly the major music companies, I guess what you call non-traditional revenue streams, as the months ahead unfurl. And we will see. We'll see if this is a flash in the pan. But as I say, the credentials behind it, the team behind it, certainly impressive and carry global potential. The second topic that I would like to bring up myself this week is, it's been a week of stats here, there, and everywhere. We had some stats out of Media Research about the size of the global market. We then had some stats from Spotify about the royalties that it pays through to the music industry and to artists and songwriters. And then we had the heavyweight portfolio of stats that is the IFPI's Global Music Report, where the official trade body of the global recorded music industry puts out the revenue stats for the prior year. The one that I just want to stick on now, because I'm still leafing through all of this information that came out seemingly within a 48-hour period, is one that we actually wrote about on Music Business Worldwide. It was from Spotify's Loud and Clear statistics. So the Loud and Clear statistics showed that 66,000 artists in 2023 generated at least $10,000 on Spotify that year. Spotify points out that's nearly triple the number of artists who generated that much in 2017, though I haven't yet done a year-on-year comparison, which I think would be more interesting. And I think 66,000 artists, as I have mentioned a number of times over the years, is quite some way away from Daniel Ek and Spotify's mission statement of helping 1 million artists, I believe. I think it was 1 million artists to earn a living from their music on streaming platforms. 66,000 is still less than a tenth of that. But that's not what I want to focus on. What I want to focus on is the fact that of the 66,000 artists, over half of them, so over half the artists who generated at least $10,000 on Spotify last year, were from countries where English is not the first language. That speaks a lot about Spotify and its rapid growth across the globe. And it launched, it's pretty much available in every significant market outside of China now. But also it speaks, of course, about the changing dynamics of the music industry itself. And when that was covered by Music Business Worldwide, when we covered that over half of the artists earning $10,000 on Spotify last year from countries where English is not the first language, we also mentioned the fact that Luminate put out some statistics and they showed across global streaming, I believe, last year, I think that was global audio and video, that 55% of the top 10,000 tracks, so the top 10,000 streaming tracks globally, 55% or just below, I think, but 55% approximately last year were English language. And that statistic has fallen and fallen. In 2021, it was at 67%. In 2023, 55%. We're almost certainly looking at a situation where in 2024, that's going to fall to 50% or below, i.e. non-English language music will overtake English language music in the top 10,000 tracks. So it all just speaks generally to the changing dynamics of the global market. And I guess top of my head, something to mention here, if over half the artists generating $10,000 on Spotify are from countries where English is not the first language, you then have to start to question the market share of the three, what we would term, Charlie, the three major music companies in various markets across the world. And then once you do that, you start to understand why Universal Music Group would pay a substantial sum to buy a majority share in Maven Records, for one thing, in Nigeria recently. You would understand why Warner is now taking its acquisition of Believe so seriously. And as we speak, Charlie, Warner have just been given access to what they call the data room, the financial data room of Believe. So whether or not Warner will make an official bid, we will find out, I would guess, in the next week or so. We've spoken before on this podcast, Charlie, about the fact that I think at Believe, around a quarter of the revenues of that company come just from Asia. And it's a company that, as we know, has invested in growth markets early. And I just think statistics like this one that we've seen from Spotify, they speak to the forward-thinking nature of companies like Believe and the CEO, Denis Ladegallery, and they speak to the changing nature of the global market and why the three majors, as I would call them, are looking and keen to invest substantially in companies that have a foothold in those markets.
Well, I think it's very true. I think we have to be careful with Spotify stats, which are obviously presented to their own benefit. And they made a major push into multiple international territories early and have benefited at the same time, whether it's India or other markets. They're not always the dominant player in those markets. So we have to be careful. But yeah, two things can be true. Now, when you take that stat, $10,000 isn't a tremendous amount. So I think you have to then start doing the hierarchies and where are the true major movers that are internationally millions of unit equivalents worldwide. But it's very significant. The monetization of entire territories of billions of people is a game changer in the sense that if you don't do that, you are going to become a minority of the business. At the same time, it doesn't mean suddenly that the major music markets are not tremendously important from a profit point of view, too. I poke holes in the ARPU stat, the average revenue per user, because the reality is that in a market where you can charge the equivalent of $10 or 10 pounds or 14 pounds versus a market where you're getting a dollar, there's big differences there. At the same time, when you're getting $1 per consumer and there's a billion consumers, $1 billion is a lot. So they're both true. And so I absolutely think that it's relevant. I do think that the difference between the Luminate number and the Spotify number may be also because, again, it's back to that issue of, well, is Spotify the number one player here? In South America, YouTube has, for a number of years, been a really significant player in music and in consumption that way. So they're both true. It's a big, complicated world, and you can find the facts to support whatever argument you want to make.
Look, you say quite rightly that we shouldn't be dismissive of the importance of the major music markets. I mean, top three traditionally, I think US, Japan, and the UK. But then the other part of this, of course, is if on the Spotify side, they say that over half the artists who generated at least $10,000 are from countries where English is not the first language. They don't talk about where those artists' music is earning that money. So to your point, in the US, typically consumers will be paying, depending on what the ARPU is in that market, Charlie, because I understand that student deals and family deals can bring this down. The flagship individual Spotify subscription is now $10.99, $11 a month. So if you're an artist from Indonesia and your music starts to move in the US, even on a sort of fairly micro level compared to anything you might see in the Hot 100, you could be making significant money versus if your music was arguably in the upper echelons of the charts just in your own domestic market. So there's a lot going on in that statistic. But as I say, it certainly speaks to changing dynamics and the official globalization, I think it's fair to say, of the recorded music industry.
Very true.
Charlie, I'm going to have to leave us there. I have a number of other topics I would have liked to have brought up this week, including those IFPI stats and those media stats. Maybe they'll wait till next week. But thank you very much for finding the time for us. And we hope our listeners will join us on Talking Trends when we come together again in the near future.
Thank you.